In our study this evening, I want to spend a little bit of time identifying characters. You know, one of the most difficult things of this particular segment of our study is difficulty with names. And if you follow closely on the chart of the kings that you have in your lesson book, it's so, so helpful. Again, let me underscore, there may be better charts. I just haven't seen them. This is one of the best charts that's so helpful, especially if you take some notes along with information, additional information as we go. There on pages 103 and so forth, the following several pages as it discusses the period of the divided kingdom, I think you'll find it to be incredibly helpful because it not only lists the kings and tells you what alternate names by which they are called, but it tells you in what year of the corresponding king they began to reign. It tells you as well who were the prophets during that period, and it identifies some of the events of neighbors that were round about them that proved to be interactive with them as enemies. And that's so helpful in our study, to keep the text straight, to avoid confusion, so we know who we're talking about when we're reading in a particular text. Now, this segment of our study, at least in my judgment, is one that is the most difficult. So let's not get bogged down, but let's do the homework so that we will be able to remember who does what. Now, as we discuss the kings of Judah, we know that David was promised that his kingdom would be established, his lineage would be established. And we can follow that as we read in the genealogies of Luke and in Matthew's account, and we can bring that forward all the way to Christ. Now that's significant. The lineage would be through Judah, through David, his descendant, and then follow that all the way through to Christ. So we can follow that lineage that was established. But these kings, I want to drop down. Now understand, we're jumping some generations from David to Jehoshaphat. And as we come to Jehoshaphat, we note that he was a good king. He had a son named Jehoram. Now we're going to talk about Jehoram. Jehoram had some problems. He was not a very good king at all. In fact, he was a very wicked king. But on the follow-up of that, we know that Jehoram had a son, and his name was Ahaziah. Ahaziah was not a good king. And we know that Ahaziah eventually had a son whose name was Joash. Now, we want to remember him as a good king among the people of God. Joash was a very good king from many respects. But as we look at the northern kingdom, now, as far as good or bad king is concerned, we just blanket statement. All the kings of the northern kingdom were bad. It was just a matter of how bad. Some were a little better than others, but none were good. All were bad. Now, when we look and note that the northern kingdom began with what king? Not on this chart now. Who was the first after the division? Jeroboam. That's right. Now, we know that dynasty after dynasty occurs. Jeroboam had one son, Nebat, I believe, who became king, and after that he was killed. And then we've got sporadic kings or lineages established, and as we discussed Zimri, he only was king for how long? 1 week. And somebody killed him, he burned the palace over himself and killed himself, and then Omri became king. Now, we noted that during this particular period in the history of the northern 10 tribes, there was division. There was another player for king. But Omri became the king of the northern 10 tribes. Omri had a son. What was his name? Ahab. We don't want to forget that. Ahab sets a new benchmark of wickedness for the kings of Israel. And so we want to note Ahab. Now here's where it begins to get complicated. But it don't last very long. So look carefully at the chart. Ahab had three children. Now, I'm not saying that that's all that he had, but he had three children. One was a daughter. Her name was Athaliah. A son, Jehoram, and a son, Ahaziah. Did I pronounce that right? Ahaziah, thank you. I knew that didn't sound right. Ahaziah. Pronounced it right a while ago. Ahaziah. Yes, David? Yes, Jehoram over here married Athaliah over there, and they had a son, and what was his name? Ahaziah over here. Now, let's back up and tie on some of these points that we didn't discuss and talk about this Ahaziah. This Ahaziah over here, the son of Ahab, became king. You'll see that in the list of kings. He reigned for 2 years. After Ahaziah, Jehoram, Ahab's son, Ahaziah's brother, became king of the northern 10 tribes. And he reigned for 12 years. Now we're going to discuss that in 2 Kings chapter 3 beginning and talk about his reign, keeping in mind as a king of Israel, he was a bad king. All of these over here were. But David, you brought up an interesting observation. Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, married Ahab's daughter, Athaliah. And when they had a son, his name was Ahaziah, the same as Athaliah's brother, same name. Now that's where it gets complicated. But that's not the only places that it gets complicated. But that's the most complicated. And if we can trail our way through that in the reading of the text and keep this Ahaziah separate from that Ahaziah and this Jehoram separate from that Jehoram, we'll have it right. Okay? Now, one of the easiest keys to remember that in the reading of the text is when you come across this Ahaziah, question your mind when you come across this name. Was he the son of Ahab? Look back in the text. Often it's stated that he was the son of Ahab. If it's the son of Ahab, then this king is king in Israel, the northern 10 tribes. If it tells us over here that the Ahaziah that's being identified is king of Judah, then it separates it for us in the text. So go back and look who the father was. See if you can find some identifying characteristics, whether he was of Judah or of Israel. That'll help keep it straight. Yes.
But just to clarify, the Jehorams are brothers-in-law.
That is correct.
And the Ahaziahs are uncle and nephew.
That is correct. True, and one of the things they did that we don't generally do is give two or three names. Now see, that complicates the thing. When you have Ahaziah over here, the son of Jehoram and Athaliah, his name also was Jehoahaz. Now again, what I want you to notice is that when you're reading the account, back up. If you run across a name that's in any respect similar, of course, in this, it's not even similar.
Well, it is. Right here, the
okay. Okay. Well, that works.
Here's how I remember. I teach fourth grade. I'm all about stupid memory tricks. Okay? Jehoah starts with a J, but he's the guy that's in Judah, which also starts with a J. I have to associate things.
Okay. You sound like Donna. She does that too. I say just learn it. There it is. Just memorize it.
Yeah.
Well, often if I can have a chart like this, that's helpful to me. But whatever works. You know, to keep these fellows in line as to who each character is. Because if you don't know who the character is, you get confused. You don't know what's going on. And
these guys have other names?
No. Just over here. Now, to complicate things, we know that this Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram and Athaliah, his mother became his counselor. What do you think that his teaching in Judah was? Yes. Now, Athaliah, we're going to get some interesting discussion, I think, about her. She was not a very nice lady. And she decided that she wanted to rule. So what does she do? She kills everybody else. Yeah. Now, she usurped the throne, but only for a while. We're going to discuss how that young Joash, at a very young age, was hidden by the priest and his wife, and at a very young age, considerably, he became or was declared to be king. And so Joash then became king. Now, we'll talk about all of that as we go along, but I think this chart will be helpful to you to keep things straight. Yes, Joey? Same one. Same person. No. No. Look here. Jehoram married Athaliah, the son of Ahab. Athaliah and Jehoram had Ahaziah. Yeah. She was the daughter of Ahab, which makes Ahaziah the grandson of Ahab. That is right. That is right. So she usurps the throne. But this is how she did that. That's how she did that. Pardon me? No. Not at all. And, of course, these two become interesting characters as well. You wonder about Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, and his decision to marry someone like Athaliah. You might expect the things that we read of concerning this Jehoram, but not necessarily this one. But you have to question his integrity when he marries a woman that he knows is of this family lineage. Her daddy is Ahab. Well, I've often described this period of history of Judah and Israel as better than a soap opera. Because it really gets gnarly during this period. Richard and then Carolyn.
Well, you know, it's not so strange that Jehoram would have done that because
his
daddy had an alliance with both Ahab and Ahaziah.
Well, yeah, that is true. They're tied.
Part of the family.
Part of the family, yep. Which helps us to see why God said way back when, make no alliances with these other folks over here who are worshiping idols. Well, we know that way back up the history of the kings of Israel, they did. And the idolatrous practices just seemed to follow from generation to generation to generation. And when you have a good king having participated in that kind of relationship with Ahab and his, well, obviously his sons and daughter, it really isn't such a shocker. This was poor judgment on Jehoshaphat to do that. In fact, it was disobedience to do that. Now, Joash, I want to make this comment about young Joash. His name is called Jehoash. So that's not a different character, same man. And we want to follow that consistently in our study. Now, here is a chart as it continues, and you see Athaliah, here married to Jehoram, their son Ahaziah, and so forth. That's where we are. Here's Joash, or Jehoash, and he has a son named Amaziah. Now, we've looked at Ahaziah's other name, Jehoahaz, and Jehoash. And then Amaziah has a son named Uzzah, the same as Azariah. Right here.
Yeah, no, not Uzziah.
Yeah, Uzziah. Didn't I say Uzziah? No, I didn't mean to say Uzziah. Uzziah, over here in 2 Chronicles 26. Uzziah. He's also called Azariah. You have that puzzled look. Okay. Jehoram, king of Israel, becomes king. Yes. That is correct. That is correct. That's right, in the 12th year of Jehoram. Not a change of dynasty in Judah.
In Israel,
yes. That's correct.
So Ahaziah is not king of Judah for very long.
1 year. Yeah.
And then Ahaziah is when this other dynasty takes over in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With Jehu.
Totally.
Sounds like you pretty well got it nailed. See, here's our end of this dynasty, and the beginning with Jehu, and then Jehoahaz, then Jehoash, also called Joash. Does that throw you a curve? Yeah. And then you've got Jeroboam the second and Zechariah. We're going to get to those characters. Yes, yes. So you see how complicated. Yeah. Well, if that helps, put a number out to the side. I often, contrary to Richard's thinking, write in my Bible. And I know he thinks that's a terrible thing. But if it helps you to make a notation in your Bible, King of Judah, King of Israel, then do that. If that'll help you to keep the character straight. Yes, Joy? You're right. Right. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Now, we see that in the text. And where it gets complicated, Carolyn, is where you have these characters reigning at the same time. And if you follow that down, Joash, the same as Jehoash in the lineage of Judah. And then right over here very closely, you've got the same names. But different characters, kings in Israel. Now, when you're reading the text, that will just make all kinds of difference to your understanding to know what character you're reading about. Now, we're going to try to keep that straight in our study, and if I've got it confused, then I'll probably confuse you. So call me on it if you think that would be helpful if I've missed that somewhere. As you follow down the kings, this chart I just put in here to follow it to its ultimate end, to name all of the kings. But this is far ahead of where we're going to be studying. But you'll note that we still have the same problem with names. Jehoahaz. Well, we've already looked at some of that. Characters, you know, who have familiar names like John or Chris. Two in this congregation. Named Chris. And so you see how difficult that can be with common names, both in the northern and the southern kingdom. And then when you multiply that by those names being given a shorter version, as you mentioned, or another name altogether, as in the case of Jehoiakim and Eliakim. Well, they're similar in some respects. And here you have Jehoiachin, Jeconiah, and Coniah, talking about the same character. And then Zedekiah, Mattaniah, same character. And so if these charts will help you when you're reading from the text, email me or send a note to the church's website address, and we'll get that to you. Anything to help you in your study to know who you're reading about during this kind of a complex period of names. Now, our point is not necessarily to memorize the line of kings and the alternate names by which each one might be called. That would be a great thing if you want to do that. I wouldn't object. But that's not our goal. Our goal and purpose is to see what these kings did. Understanding, as we tried to emphasize Sunday morning, the general rule of God was, you do what I say and I'll bless you. You don't and I'll curse you. And what we want to see is how that these kings disobeyed God and they were cursed. Now, in this previous chart, this one, what we want to see is that none of the kings on the northern 10 tribes served God. Now, ultimately, what would you expect God to do? Exactly what He said He would do. Take the kingdom away from you. Destroy you from this good land, which He did when He brought up the Assyrians and conquered the city of Samaria, the capital of the northern 10 tribes, about 722 B.C., depending on what sources you're reading. Some give 721. But if you follow the kings, we look at the kings of Judah, we've got good king Hezekiah, good king Josiah. As you come down a little further, not such good kings. In fact, Zedekiah was not really anything more than a rubber stamp of the Babylonian Empire. And during the days of Gedaliah, Judah is destroyed by the Babylonians as the city of Jerusalem, the capital, is destroyed in 586. David and then Joab. Well, there are dates on this. I'd have to figure that up, David, but you can do that. To the time of Ahab, you said? To the time of Ahab. Okay. I don't see a note that I've written. But we know that at the top of page 103, you see the date given about 900 years before Christ. See that? Up in the top left-hand corner, about 900 years. You can add up the years of Elah, Zimri, of course the week, and then Omri, 12 years, and then Ahab is next. So you can get a pretty fair idea of about what year Ahab began to reign. And then go back and get a date on when they entered into the land of Canaan. And that'll give you an approximate date. Joey, and then Randy.
You make a good point here about how the relationship with God was different. When they left Egypt, the relationship with God, He in fact saved them from the bondage of slavery. They were in a good relationship with God. They could have kept that and maintained it, but they didn't walk in His way and they lost it. So you have an analogy between this.
Yes. Yes.
And that principle refutes the false teaching that some would try to push today. If you're in a good relationship with God, you can't lose it.
Well, it's
quite true. Go back to these lessons, go, well, they lost it.
Exactly. Especially when you look at a single generation. Sometimes that occurred in that generation. Sometimes it waited till the next generation or maybe the next generation before apostasy became complete. Oh, yes. Yes. Now, while we're generalizing here, and that's what this is, we're doing some generalization here as we get a bird's eye view of these kings in the northern and the southern kingdom. But while we're generalizing, let's understand that the lineage of kings, what caused the kingdom to divide to begin with? We say, well, the poor judgment of Rehoboam. Well, it was really kind of more than that, was it not? All right, what happened with Solomon? Yes. All right. Well, it did, yes. But as we look at the lineage of the kings, when you look at the northern 10 tribes, none of them, not a one of them, served God. Wouldn't you then anticipate that the promise that Moses made way back during the time of bringing them up out of Egypt, that if you worship idols, God will destroy you out of the land into which He's going to bring you? Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 24 and 25. All right, this is true. They didn't do it, and so consequently, we've got the influence of these heathen nations that pulled them in the direction of idolatry. Now, when that was culminated, God said, I've had enough. Now, playing in the background of all of God's dealing with the northern 10 tribes, playing in the background of that are the events of history where the Assyrians are growing into a world empire. And God used the Assyrians to conquer the northern 10 tribes. Now, Isaiah told them about that. You can read about it in Isaiah, what is it, chapter 9 or chapter 10, where he named them, that they were the instrument of God's wrath. The Assyrians were. It did. That's right. Now, to generalize again, a bird's eye view of our history, we see the fall of the northern 10 tribes. We see about 130-something years later, the fall of the southern kingdom of Judah. They're doing the same thing. And God raises up the Babylonians and takes them captive. Now, as we look carefully at that, we would expect that end. That's exactly what God said through Moses He would do. That's exactly what He said through Joshua that He would do. But in Deuteronomy chapter 30, Moses had told them, when you return, what will God do? He will restore you. He will bring you up out of captivity and bring you back into this land. Now that gets us to the book of Ezra and Nehemiah and so forth, the book of Haggai, as they're coming back into the land. Now, again, as we generalize and are just making a brief outline of our history, we see the necessity of that in the development of God's scheme of redemption. Where was Jesus to be born? In Bethlehem. Bethlehem in Judea. God said that through Micah, the Old Testament prophet, specifically. And we'll look at the date and so forth on some of that. But what I want us to see is that here are specific prophecies of the coming of the Son of God who would bring redemption so that the sinful man might have the hope of forgiveness. Now that's where we're going with that. And these events in history spread out as distant as they are. You see opportunity after opportunity after opportunity for these people to repent. You see the long suffering of God. But God always drew a line in the sand and said, that's it, I've had enough. Brought about His judgment. Randy? Yes? I believe that's correct. And these other two were somewhat appointees by the king of Babylon. They were puppets. That's the word I've used to describe them. I don't know of a better one. He is listed in the lineage of Christ, and I want to call your attention to the importance of that. With Coniah being listed in the lineage of Christ, we go back to the text of Jeremiah, what is it, Richard? Help me out. Chapter 22, thereabouts, I think, where Jeremiah prophesied that none of the seed of Coniah would sit upon his throne in Jerusalem and prosper. It's the last couple of verses, I believe, of Jeremiah chapter 22, I think. Now, the significance of that is establishing that Coniah and Jeconiah are the same character. Tells us that Coniah is in the lineage of Christ. Could then even Christ sit on the throne in Jerusalem and prosper? No. Which tells us that the nature of the kingdom over which Christ would sit and rule was not in Jerusalem. It wasn't physical in nature. And that's what Jesus said in John 18:36 when he said, "My kingdom is not of this world." But he would be king. And in Acts chapter 2, we see him exalted as king at the right hand of God, but not in Jerusalem. Where was he exalted? In heaven itself. That's right. Now, we've said a whole lot about that. Is that the correct passage? Jeremiah 22, last couple of verses. Okay. Thank you. So as we look at that, we see that God is bringing this to a close. He's already brought this to a close. There would be a period of restoration during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, and Haggai would lead in the rebuilding of the temple, 520 to 516 BC. And then, of course, as we look at some of the what we refer to as minor prophets, we close the Old Testament period with the prophecy of Malachi concerning the coming of John the Baptist. And then you've got a 400-year period of silence. Now, that's just a bird's-eye view of the significance of this Old Testament history. Do we see that when we are studying these specific events in the lives of individual kings, that we're not talking about just an individual isolated story? We're talking about how the activities of that king fits into the overall plan of God to bring about His Son into the world in order that we might be saved. Question or comment? Okay. Well, I'm going to pass beyond that, and let's back up in time. Let's back up to the time of Ahaziah. Which Ahaziah is this? This is the son of Ahab. That's right. How do we know that? He's in Israel. That's right. He's in Israel. Let's go back to the text of 1 Kings chapter 22. 1 Kings chapter 22. Begin reading at verse 51. It says, "And Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. And he reigned 2 years over Israel. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, and walked in the way of his father, and in the way of his mother, and in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherein he made Israel to sin. And he served Baal, and worshipped him, and provoked to anger Jehovah, the God of Israel, according to all that his father had done." Now, I want you to think with me, when we think of Ahab, benchmark of wickedness, but the text tells us concerning Ahaziah that he walked in the ways of his father and in the ways of his mother. Who was his mother? Jezebel. Ahab and Jezebel. Would you really expect a whole lot better out of Ahaziah? Well, no. But the fact that he walked in the way of his mother and his father, and mention is made that he walked in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. What was it that Ahab and Jezebel introduced among God's people? Idolatry, specifically, Baal worship. Baal worship. What was it that Jeroboam had introduced? Calf worship. What then does that tell us about Ahaziah? Both, likely. He did both. okay? Which is not uncommon. When we find the practice of idolatry being engaged in Old Testament times, whether it be the people of God or their neighbors, it wasn't uncommon for them to recognize several different idols or gods. For example, the gods of the hills, the gods of the plains, so forth, we've talked about. Yes. God had appeared to Solomon and spoke to him firsthand three times. Well, yeah, but you look at that and you say, be careful who you marry. What'd Solomon do? Pardon me? Watch out for the women. Be careful who you marry. Yes. Yeah, what you're experiencing there for just a moment, David, is exasperation. Trying to understand how they did this, how they reasoned that way. And there are many times that we are exasperated when we think about, why did somebody do this? Case in point, in John chapter 6, we note that Jesus performed miracles, healing sick folks and so forth. And he fed 5,000 men with a little boy's lunch. And the very next day, that same multitude found him over in Capernaum and they wanted him to feed them. And he said, you need to seek me because of the, not because you were fed, but because of the words that I have. And they said, show us a miracle that we might believe you're the Christ. Show us a miracle. Well, what did they think that was yesterday? Yeah. And we know better. We know better. Yeah. Gonna get mad and yeah. Yeah. Gonna have it my way. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what we see back here. Now, we've noted also about Ahaziah that as we discussed and studied about the good king, Jehoshaphat, and Richard just pointed this out to us tonight, that Jehoshaphat had made an alliance or was in the process of trying to make an alliance with Ahaziah to build ships to go to various places and bring back gold. And, of course, that failed. The ships were broken up. That failed, and that alliance did not continue. God was displeased with Jehoshaphat, but this is the Ahaziah that attempted to make a league or an alliance with Jehoshaphat. Now, how did Jehoshaphat know? How did Ahaziah end up? This brings us to the beginning of 2 Kings. 2 Kings. Who can tell me how Ahaziah died? What happened to him? No, that's a bit later. He did. He fell through the lattice, and evidently it hurt him pretty bad. And he makes inquiry of Elijah, the prophet, whether he's going to live or die. And what does Elijah tell him? Well, yeah, but before that, you just jump right to the chase. Let's back up a little bit. What does he tell him before that? He told him, okay, you're going to die. Well, how does it, I guess what I'm asking is, how does that all begin to transpire? What we see is that in verse 7, he said to them, what manner of man was he that came up to meet you and told you these words? And they answered, it was a hairy man with a girdle of leather and so forth. And he said, well, that's Elijah, the Tishbite. And then the king came to a captain of 50 with his 50, and what did he do? Burned up. That's right. When he came before Elijah, or attempted to, he was burned up. And Ahaziah sends another man of 50 with his 50. And what happens to him? Burned up. And then a third time, a man, a captain, comes to him. And this time, this captain says in verse 13, the latter part of it, "O man of God, I pray thee, let my life and the life of these 50 thy servants be precious in thy sight." And in verse 15, it continues that the angel of Jehovah said unto Elijah, "Go down with him, and be not afraid of him, for he arose and went down with him unto the king. And he said unto him, Thus saith Jehovah, for as much as thou hast sent messengers to inquire of Baalzebub, the god of Ekron, is it because there is no god in Israel to inquire of his word? Therefore thou shalt not come down from the bed, whether thou art gone up, but shall surely die." All right, so you're going to die. But here's the events that transpired that gets us to that point. And so it was. In verse 17, he died according to the word of Jehovah, which Elijah had spoken. And Jehoram began to reign in his stead. Now, let's pause right there. This particular verse becomes rather interesting in a lot of ways. I want to pass on beyond some of that to get to some of this. I want to look at this Jehoram that became king. It says, "In the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah." Carolyn, are you confused yet? Verse 17, "He died according to the word of Jehovah, which Elijah had spoken. And Jehoram began to reign in his stead in the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, because he had no son." You've got Ahaziah's brother, Jehoram, on the throne in Israel during the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, in Judah. Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah, just nod. Okay. Well, it makes it interesting when you say Jehoram became king during the second year of Jehoram. You see, we can't be talking about the same man. So we've got to identify the characters. In verse 18, it says, "Now the rest of the acts of Ahaziah, which he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel?" Now, I want to jump ahead beyond chapter 2. We're going to come back to chapter 2, but look at chapter 3 now, beginning in verse 1. We continue to talk about Jehoram, the son of Ahab. It says that he began to reign over Israel in Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, but not like his father and like his mother, for he put away the pillar of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, verse 3, "He cleaved unto the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin, and he departed not therefrom." What are we reading about? Jehoram, the son of Ahab, made an alliance with Jehoshaphat. We talked about that in our discussion of Jehoshaphat. We know in verse 4 that Mesha, king of Moab, was sheep master, and he's got a deal worked out with Jehoram, the king of Israel, to pay, I don't want to call it necessary protection money, taxes or something to that effect. Tribute, that works, to Jehoram. But then it tells us that when he died, what did the king of Moab do? He don't want to pay anymore. That's right. So now we've got a problem that crops up. In verse 7, then, it tells us that he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, "The king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go up with me against Moab to battle, And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses. Now, these are the words of Jehoshaphat. We've talked about that as we discussed the reign of Jehoshaphat. But in this quandary, we note that the king of Israel, which was at this point who? Ahaziah. Yeah. In verse 9, it says, so the king of Israel went with the king of Judah, who's that? Jehoshaphat, and the king of Edom. And they made a circuit of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host, nor for the beast that followed them. Now, Jehoshaphat is interested in making inquiry, and we've talked about this as we discussed the reign of Jehoshaphat, of the Lord. And he makes inquiry of Elisha, the prophet, and Ahaziah is actually, I believe, the one that makes the inquiry. But Elisha said, if it were not for my regard for the presence of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, I wouldn't look toward thee nor see thee. Now, we've talked about that and noted the favor that Jehoshaphat gains at this point, and we talked about the deliverance from the Moabites. And we talked about how that the Moabites saw the water that God had provided for these three kings and their army, and thinking it to be blood, they assumed then that these armies have turned against themselves, and they're destroyed, and all we have to do is go in and pick up the spoil. And when they got down there, they found out that what they thought wasn't true. And so they were destroyed then by these three kings and their armies. Yes. For a while, yes. That's right. We're going to look at that in chapter 2 of 2 Kings. You can read about that, chapter 2. Yes. Yes. Not much, but a little. Picks up with some details in his relationship with Ahaziah. Now keep in mind the discussion in 2 Kings 3 is primarily about Ahaziah. But yes, we've got some details about Jehoshaphat. So that's why we put these things together. Perhaps, I think so. Yeah, that's thinkable. Yeah. I'm sorry, say that one more time. He put away the pillar of Baal. Yeah, but he cleaved to the sins of Jeroboam. Yeah, it would be consistent with his continued practice of calf worship. I think the key is idolatry. Well, it's calf worship or Baal worship. Yeah. Well, yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily an either-or proposition here either. I mean, it seems to be an and. Yeah. Worship one, you worship two, I suppose. All right, we'll have to stop there and talk some more about it next time. We'll talk about this deliverance in chapter 3, verse 21 and following, just a little bit, and then we'll continue on to talk about Jehoram. Bad king. I want you to do some study. However, I've got a chart coming up somewhere about Elisha and the miracles that Elisha did. You might find that interesting in chapters 4 through chapter 7, the miracles of Elisha. The context of those chapters is not going to be focused on the kings and what the kings did, but more focused on the prophet Elisha and what he did. So we'll talk about that, but I don't intend, at least at this point, spending a whole lot of time about that.